Based on the aforementioned, which we'll see as we go, we could also understand this, that it says that he took from the stones of the place, he put them around his head, and he slept in that place. It says that he put it around his head. Rashi explains, he made it like a small drain pipe around his head, because he was afraid of wild animals. So the sons started arguing with each other. This one says, on me the tzaddik should place his head. This one says that this stone said the tzaddik should put his head on me. So immediately the Eved made them into one stone. Yeah, we did do this inside. Even though, why does it help making a little a pipe around, the shape of a pipe around his head? Wild animals can attack the rest of his body, as the Taz asks. So I'm a fresh in Masba. So the first one explained as an emissary's Kavanah Rashi is Yankee, but Makagans and Gansukuf with Avonim, was the Libis and Madaik Bosheni Mazer. That they say that Rashi actually meant that he surrounded his whole body with stones, which is why he used the term Mazev, was does the shame tzina cotton, sheyetzim and amaschilu, leshech Mazev, and sheyesh amaschilu. So these commentaries all answer that a Mazev is actually like a drain pipe that goes out from a larger pipe. So the reason why he used the term, description of using the smaller drain pipe is to indicate that there was a larger pipe going around. So it's like a smaller circle coming out of it. There was a larger circle of stones around his body. Around his head was a smaller circle of stones going out from the larger circle. But that, so the question still is, okay, very nice. But that's not how we understand. If the fact is that he put it around his entire body, why does the Torah emphasize the fact that he put it around his head? The question is, what does it help making a pile of stones around your head, like in the shape of a little pipe, if wild animals could easily jump over a little pipe? So you didn't really gain that much. This we did not get to inside. So we could say the explanation in a Hasidic, according to Hasidus. Okay. Pu'ulas Yagav from Vayikach Me'avnei Amakav Vayosem Merasheisav is given on Aveda Ruchas. The action of Yaakov of taking stones and putting them around his head was in actuality a spiritual effort on his part. As er het mamshich umigal gewen bim mit yuse agashmas, dem er han shama betek of god, that he drew down and revealed within his physical being the light of his soul with very great force. Was das der in avonim take it, that is what avonim stones represent,
strength,
solidity, strength, force. On the shas as verden skala in mitzias hagashmis, in emes and mitzias dineshan, and when it becomes revealed in one's physical existence, the true existence, which is the soul, hater helen vehester fun gashmis kein tvisas makimit. So therefore, in such a situation, the concealment of the physical has no place. And therefore, if he's on a spiritual standing in which his soul is completely and fully fills his physical being, then animals cannot do any harm to him. If you look at footnote 95, he says this concept is similar to the statement of Chazal, "D'chshenika tzelam elikim ala odon, ein achayis yichelim lahazike." That the Zohar says that when this that an animal could consider harming a person is only when the person has done something to diminish his divine form in which he's created, his divine image. But if the person's divine image is intact, then no wild animal could approach such a person. So there's a similar concept here, is that when a person is living in such a way that his physical being expresses the true reality, which is the spiritual reality of his soul, then no wild animal can do any harm or damage.
But what is it that deters the animal? Is it they respect the Elokus, or is it...
The animal instinctively knows that it has no shlita over something which is godly. It has no power over such a thing. I mean, it's similar to, you know, smaller animals which will stay away from anything, any human being that's all just that's alive. It's an idea, because it recognizes that it's something that's a threat to it. Right? Like a mouse is going to run away.
So you're saying it's threatened by...
So I'm saying so even a large, huge, wild animal, if it sees a godly being, it realizes this is beyond me, this is something higher than me, and I can't...
It's overwhelmed.
Wouldn't Yaakov be...
And I have no power over it.
Wouldn't Yaakov be at that level even without this? I mean, he was in a kovel alakus, I mean, Mamash, he was such a high level.
Again, did I ever think there is such a similar concept, but this, the form of defense that Yaakov chose to make. Your question is, why did he need to come on to this form of defense? Why wasn't he?
His metzias itself. That's
a question. But I'm saying, do we have the same question about many of the things that Yaakov did, even Begashmis? I mean, why did the Kavala of course have to split up his family into two camps and send gifts to Esav? And these things also need explaining.
Like, he brought this on himself, that it should be apparent, the Kedusha on his goof, like.
Right.
But he himself, if he already was made, but here, these other things was just splitting up. His, I mean, that
so
was...
So he's saying that Dafka, in this place, when he reached, he's explaining that all of this is a result of the fact that Yaakov, you know, achieved a certain level in this place, in the Makom HaMikdash, that he did not have prior, that he had reached a state of lying down, which is a state that his entire being, that the lowest part of his physical being was on this level of the highest part of his soul. I mean, that's what he achieved in this place at this time. I mean, each one of the others achieved many things in their lifetime, many spiritual levels. They went from spiritual level to spiritual level. The Yankovino, the point where he achieved this state, that his entire his physical being, from the lowliest part of his physical being, completely revealed and expressed the highest part of his spiritual being, that was here and now.
He probably didn't know it because he was honored, right? Because he was humble. You know, he might not have known it.
This is also true. I wouldn't say that he didn't know it, but he didn't rely on it. When a yes as makam mishkan nefesh alikis who the mechin shabereish umishan mispashat as l'chalei vare, and being as in the words of the Alter Rebbe and Tanya, that the place of the dwelling of the godly soul is in the intellectual faculties that are housed in the head, and from there it extends outward to all the other limbs. The rib is that ikigili from take if Hanasham of Aruchnis, Avonim, Dafke, Mechan Shabereish, Mirashis. That's the primary place in which is expressed the true full force of the Neshama is in the head. That's why stones really he put around his whole body, meaning that he caused the force of his Neshama to be revealed in his whole body. What's the special emphasis in the pasuk that he put stones around his head? Why does the pasuk emphasize the head? The reason why the pasuk emphasizes the head is because ultimately in the head is expressed more than any other part of the person this full force of the neshama, being that it is the place, it is the seat of where the neshama rests within the person. Das ist was Rashi ist Mamscher ist Chilu Medivis, wo es zu sei, sie mehr als Ola in ihr Zadiges Rech, wie sie mehr als Ola in ihr Zadiges Rech. This is what Rashi continues, and he says that the stones began to argue one with the other, each one saying, upon me should the Tzadik rest. The Medivis given to the Mepharshim seine Mazda. What was the argument? So the Mepharshim explained, the argument was zwischen the Avonim Shebim Marziv, Vel Chazanim Ben Soviv Reishay, mit the Avonim Shebim Aschilo, Vel Chazanim Ben Soviv Gufe. According to one of the explanations of Mepharshim, what was the argument? The argument was between the stones in the part that surrounded his head with the stones in the part that surrounded his body. Und der Techen am Riv ist gewähnt, Allah yaniach tzadikas reishu. So what are they arguing about? According to the way we're explaining it now, what are they arguing about? That each one said, das heißt, dass der Teg, if in avonim gilu erktushu b'chelik ha-guf shal yankiv, so sein wie der Teg, if avonim ha-gilu b'chelik ha-reish shal yankiv, makam mishka nefesh shal ikis. The stones around the other parts of the body were insisting that what does it mean? That the other parts of the body were insisting that the neshama should be fully revealed in all parts of the body equal to the revelation of the neshama in the head, which is the seat of where the neshama dwells in the body. So miyad, Asana Kadosh Baruch Hu Eben Achas. So immediately the Eibusha made them into one stone. Der Gili Tevet Kevakdush Avonim is Gevaren Der Zelbe Bechelik Arei Shal Yankim Bechelik Shal Gufay Shal Yankim. So Yankimino achieved this ultimate state in which it became one stone. The force of his neshama was revealed equally in the lowest part of his body as in the highest part of his body, the head. Tachlis Ushlemus, Hachiba Vis Achtus from Mailu Umata, Betur Evan Achas, Al Yede Gilu Yatzmus. The ultimate and the most complete form of bonding and unification of the highest and the lowest in one stone. As one. How is this accomplished? As we explained earlier, through the revelation of the divine essence, which transcends all definitions of high and low. That is where the highest, it is through that the highest and the lowest can merge in such a way that the lowest aspects of existence reflect the highest aspects of existence, that the lowest physical being should express the reality of the highest spiritual reality. That is through the revelation of the divine essence, which transcends both equally, and therefore is the ultimate equalizer. So we explained that's this idea of achieving this state in which the lowest part of the person's existence is completely one and completely expresses and reveals the highest spiritual reality of the existence of the neshama. The stamot is given by Yishkav by Imakim Ahu, Ishtavus Haresh Vareg. It is after he put the stones around his head, and they became one stone, that it says he lay down in that place, that he put himself in a position, lying down, as a person is in a position where the head and the feet are level with each other. Pshitas damot is nedokin, as in his makim klal lehezik chayiz v'adra. It's obvious that in such a state, there's not even the remote possibility of any damage being incurred by wild beasts, and if anything, on the contrary, there is no reason for concern. As the Rebbe says in footnote 98, that we see a similar concept, as we point out, from the prophetic promise of what will be in the future, that the wolf and the lamb shall lie together, and that the wild animals will not do harm and they will not cause destruction, because the world will be filled with the knowledge of God. That in a place where godliness is fully revealed, there is no possibility of wild animals doing harm or destruction.
So wait, is Rebbe going to answer them why he did it? Why he put soldier on his head? Because that's...
Again?
Is Rebbe going to go on to answer why he put soldier on his head?
Why he put what on his head?
Stones.
We just explained what...
No, we explained what it does and why what it means that he did it.
Right.
But...
Why was because he...
I thought it's also spiritually. It's only spiritually, there's no pshat to it.
He didn't say there's no pshat to it. He put stones around his head. The physical action was a representation of a spiritual avodah. They went hand in hand together. But ultimately, it's not the actual stone which is a protection from the wild animals. It's the spiritual avodah.
He was showing...
Because through the physical stones, the animal could easily jump over.
Right. So was he in the act of putting stones, refining himself, or he had already reached it before he put the stones down?
It was concurrently. I mean, the act of putting down the stones was the physical manifestation of the spiritual service that he was doing at the time.
I mean, because who is he showing this to?
Was he showing anything? He wasn't showing. Was he trying to demonstrate something for somebody? What he was trying to do is he was trying to bring a spiritual reality into to actualize a spiritual reality in a tangible physical way. He wasn't doing it for somebody else, he wasn't doing it for show. He was doing it as an expression of expressing his spiritual avodah in the physical reality, which is what this whole spiritual avodah is.
Why is he expressing it though? Unless it's for somebody. He's expressing his spiritual avodah.
Because that's the whole point of what he's trying to accomplish. The whole point that he's trying to accomplish is that he's trying to make the spiritual and the physical one.
But he had already... Okay. I'm not sure.
Like, why can't we just say, like, spiritually he was defending himself and that's all it was? It was just a ruchni stick away of self-defense, the whole thing with the stones.
You mean there were no stones?
No, there were. But it was like a ruchni stick of force field, whatever you'll call it. You know, that was the whole thing. And are you saying there's more of an avodas Hashem beyond that? He wanted to protect himself, right? From the wild animals.
So, I don't understand what you're adding. What do you mean force field?
In other words, you're saying physically the stones didn't protect him from animals, right?
It was the fact that his soul was completely revealed in his body that protected him from animals.
Was it all l'shem protection? Was that the ultimate tachlis of why he was doing that pe'ula?
What is it? Let's say yes, let's say not.
I'm just asking, was that the whole thing?
No, the whole thing is that ultimately, in other words, did I explain earlier that the fear of wild animals is also representative of a spiritual state? Fear of wild animals means that when a person is in a spiritual state where there is a possibility for sin, there is a possibility for negative forces having some power over him. Okay, that's a spiritual state, fear of wild animals. So that, the way he dealt with that spiritual state is by achieving the ultimate. And the reason why the soul is put through such a spiritual state is in order that through that it could achieve this ultimate. The reason why it's put through such a lowly spiritual state where it has to be afraid of negative forces is so that it should ultimately achieve this higher spiritual state, which is a point in which no negative forces have any power whatsoever.
Question is why?
Und wie bald?
That's not even getting it.
Yeah, right. His question wasn't that. His question was, why stones?
Well, no, not just why stones. In like.
Why the physical action at all?
Right.
Why the physical action at all?
Yeah, not just one circle, two now.
Okay, I mean, so the question is, why did the, Chassidus asked the question.
Why lying down?
The Chassidus asked the question, it says that the tzaddikim that are on the level of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, don't have to do mitzvahs, maisis, in order to connect to God. But they can connect to God spiritually much higher than you can connect through a mitzvah. So the question is, and what the proof is, that for 14 years,
okay.
So how many years? Why am I saying 14?
13 years.
13 years, he was in a cave where he couldn't do most mitzvahs. I mean, he certainly couldn't get hold of matzah or dalad minim, or he certainly wasn't doing those mitzvahs. And certainly, and if anything, he described the cave as being the source of all his spiritual greatness afterwards. So the Alter Rebbe explains why, because he's on such a spiritual level. So the question is, if Rav Shimon bar Yochai is on such a level that he doesn't have to do mitzvahs mitzvahs, so how come when he was out of the cave he did mitzvahs mitzvahs?
Mitzvahs.
And why do you do mitzvahs for? He doesn't need them.
He doesn't need them? There's still, I don't know, kibbutzel.
What?
Kibbutzel? I don't know.
The answer is that God's purpose is not, is the God's ultimate purpose for creation is that everything should ultimately become part of the physical reality of this physical world. And the way we do that is by doing physical actions with objects in the physical world. The ultimate fulfillment of the divine purpose is not that I achieve the highest possible spiritual state that I can achieve. My job is to make a dwelling place in the lowly realms, which means that I then take that spiritual state that I achieved and I express it into the physical world.
Okay, so that would make sense out of the one stone he would have rested his head on. Because that would seem like...
No, the whole point is that every part of his body was equal to the head. That's the whole point. The whole point is that it all became one stone, that the whole avodah that he was doing is the concept that the lowest of the low is elevated to the state of the highest of the high.
Right, but is he so therefore he's... By putting them on the ground, is he elevating all those stones by putting them there?
I mean, elevating stones. What does it mean, elevating stones?
It just represents
a levitation act. What is elevating stones?
He's using it for a high purpose, and then just being then.
He is doing a physical act in the physical world, which plays out into the physical reality. What's going on in his own reality, and by doing that, what is being accomplished within his own personal reality becomes a part of the physical world.
But his body is physical. So what did he become physical?
Right, his body is physical, but it's the physical body of a Jew. Okay, it's not as low a level of physicality as the physical world. That is why Hasidus says that person has two jobs. One is to refine his animal soul and his body. That's one job. That's not the ultimate job. The ultimate job is the dirabat tachtenim, which is not properly fulfilled until one refines one's portion of the world. Until one actually takes even the lowly physical world, which is on a far lower level than the physical body of a Jew, and refines even that. So everything that happens in one's own personal spiritual world has to ultimately be brought down into the physical world.
So it's part of his job. It's part of his job.
Right.
Okay. Now we know the others did not bring Elokus into the world like after Mount Torah.
No. Like after Mount Torah.
Yeah.
Others brought Elokus into the world.
Temporary.
The others brought Elokus into the world. The thing is that, and the others also did the mitzvah of Mila, which is not temporary, is permanent.
One
and the others, and then. Hasidus says that after all the things that we say that's lacking in the mitzvahs of the Avos, the fact is that the Avos are going to be are on the same if not higher level in Gan Eden, and they're on the same if not higher level, they're on the higher level Asad Lava. They're not missing anything. Okay. The thing is that in the relationship with the world, that the Avos did, the impact on the world was primarily symbolic, meaning that they impacted on the world, but their impact on the world was in such a way that the world itself, that something like a revelation from above, as opposed to something which came from within the world itself. In other words, these souls from Atzilus landed on a world and did things with the world, but they weren't coming from the world. They were coming from higher than this world, and therefore their impact on the world was in such a way that the impact remained higher than the world. And therefore, most of the things that they did in physical, as physical expressions of their, as physical manifestations of their spiritual accomplishments, were primarily symbolic.
What
is
in
the
Nesinus
Kaya? What in the Nesinus Kaya?
In other words, what Yaakov did here was able, this was a Kayach for the whole Veda of the Beis Hamikdash.
But part of the Nesinus Kaya is that it was actual, it's real, it's not. And Nesinus Kaya is not, doesn't mean that it's not actual. It's just on some.
For something. It's a high. It's a level. At
the right. Time. It's here. It's in this world. It's part of this world, but it still had. It's still, in order for it to be completely a part of this world, it has to come from ordinary lowly beings who have the kayach of matan Torah in order to make these revelations, which are higher than this world, become a part of this world from below. So in order for it to become a part of the world from below. That's what we do. That only we're low enough to do that, but had to become a part of the world at all, that was through the others.
I mean, in other words, that's what I'm saying. It's an Asinus Keach. In order for us to bring
an Asinus Keach means that it's down here in this world. That's where you get the Keach from.
It's not revealed in this
world. Not in Atzilus. It's here in this world.
Right, but it's not apparent.
It was apparent. But it was apparent in a way that was not a part of the world. It was apparent in a way that was higher than the world and therefore kind of overwhelmed the world. In fact, it was so much a part of the world that the Chayes Rais could see it. The Chayes Rais could actually see and sense this. That's how much a part of the world it is. But it was a part of the world in a way that its impact was not part of the world.
And that's why I was temporary, because the Caliph couldn't hold the...
So in a sense, we call it temporary in a sense that it has no... The world is not a Caliph.
This is the Atzmos we're talking about. He was Mamshik the Atzmos, right? Now the Atzmos is not... doesn't have the Hagbalas of... you know, it doesn't need a Caliph.
Right.
If it Atzmos is brought
right,
down,
right,
it has
but
to
he
be,
wanted that it should be in Tachtein and Mitzad Tachtein. He could be revealed in Tachtanim because he feels like it. He doesn't need any help from the Tachtanim. He wants that it should be in Tachtanim, mitzad the Tachtanim, mitzad avedus at Tachtanim, that the Tachtanim should make itself a tweet.
But you don't need to have the Atzmos.
You don't need anything. You need it because he wants it.
But then it's still the Atzmos if it's not revealed? The Atzmos?
Again. Atzmos, God can do whatever he wants. What he wants to do is be revealed in the world through us making the world a Keli. He can be revealed in the world not through us making the world a Keli, because he can do whatever he wants. And he could even do a kunz that he could be revealed in the world in a pneumius without us making the world a Keli. That's not what he wants. What he wants is that he should be revealed in the world in a pneumius through us making it a Keli. That's what he wants. But he set it up in a way that it also follows a certain logic. The logic is, normally he set up a system with rules, because that's what he wanted. So he created a world in which the rules of the world are that things are only going to pneumius if it's a Kaylee. See, he could have made a world that's different.
That's
he could have made a world that Kaylee make it Makif and not Kaylee make it pneumius. He could do whatever he wants. Okay. The reason why he made it the world in such a way that by making something a Kaylee for it, it goes in the pneumius is because that's how he wanted it to happen.
But that's, I mean, you get off the
so track. That's why he created this logic, and to us it's logical, it makes sense.
I mean, doesn't that difference between or is something which requires a Kaylee?
Mm-hmm.
And Atzmos doesn't require a Kaylee.
Right. Nothing, and now Eretz Makifim don't require a Kaylee. Atzmus is not, it has dagbola of neither. It doesn't require kelim, it doesn't not require kelim either. A makif not only doesn't require kelim, but it's not it's not in the slavish and kelim. Atzmus is not defined by either. It could be not in the slavish and kelim, be in the slavish and kelim, do whatever he wants. He's indefinable. If you make a rule for him, then it's not atzmus. Even if you ostensibly in your mind the rule is to show how infinite he is. But if you define him by infinity, then you're just not describing atzmus. Because atzmus is not defined by infinity either. It's neither finite nor infinite. Both finite and infinity are equally irrelevant as descriptions of atzmus. So the only thing we do is, in order to, so what we do is, because again, we have to use words, we're stuck, we got to use words, so we call that true infinity. But again, we're saying infinity, but it's not really accurate. It's not an accurate description of Atzmus. Because there is no such thing as an accurate description of Atzmus. Because Atzmus is not describable. Because it has no attributes with which to make descriptions. But you can't say Atzmus has no attributes, because that's a description. So basically what we're trying to say is that kolo, so we use words like kol yachol, we use words like, we don't know what we're talking about. Because we're talking about the unknowable. But we can't say it's unknowable either, because ultimately he's going to be known. If he wants to be known, he can be known. And he will be known. So we're just going around a circle. See, when the Rebbe came out with his statement that God could make a world which runs by itself, the Mitzat Kol Yachol, God can make a world which exists by itself. That this that we say, that this that we prove al Pisechel, that the world has to constantly be recreated, that's because God chose in creation to operate by certain rules which we call, which he created in a sechel that comprehends those rules. But if he chose to operate without those rules, he chose to operate with those rules. He made the rules and he chose to operate with them. It's at kel yachol, it's at his infinite, his omnipotence, which again is only a word. He could have made the world in such a way that it exists from itself. So. So Yael Kahn got very, very upset when the Rebbe said this, because this was not, he could not deal with this. Because Al Pisechel, you just, Al Pisechel, it's obvious. The normal way of understanding Kol Yachol Al Pisechel, what's the understanding of trying to use Sechel when talking about Kol Yachol, is that God could do everything except not be God. Which means that it's not Kol Yachol.
So the Rebbe said that Hashem could have created a world that didn't need his, didn't, the world doesn't need Hashem's existence.
You know, which means that you're saying that Hashem could have made a world that's an existence outside of himself. So he's not the only existence. So Hashem could have made a situation which ain oid milvadi is not true. So he could not handle that. He got very upset. He couldn't handle that. What do you mean? Ain oid milvadi, that's the basis of everything. Nothing else exists except God. That's the whole basis of Chassidus. The whole basis of no Chassidus without ain oid milvadi, right? The whole Chassidus is based on the fact that nothing else exists except for God. The Rebbe is saying that God is Kol Yachol. He can make something else exist besides for God. And actually exist as an existence in and of itself without being dependent on God.
When did the Rebbe say it?
The Rebbe said all kinds of things like this. I don't know, you want me to find out exactly the date. The Rebbe has all kinds of things. So to him, it sounds like the Rebbe is saying that the Rebbe is Kol Yachol. Therefore, he can make something which contradicts his own existence, his own reality, which is that none of him.
That's Atzmus.
But that's what I was saying. That's it. Atzmus is so in other words, all the crazy questions that all the crazy philosophers ask. You want a definition. You want some kind of definition. You're willing to take even a definition that makes God so great that nothing else exists besides Him, right? No, that's not an accurate thing. God, whatever God is, all this stuff is irrelevant to whatever God is. Even being God is irrelevant to whatever God is. It's a whole non-issue. It's an issue for you. It's not an issue for Him. These are all your issues. These are your hang-ups and your problems that you're bringing to the table. These are all non-issues. Existing, not existing. Does He exist? Doesn't He? This is a, you're trying to learn how to Him, it's a non-issue. Chassidus said that Rebbe explains that the fact that the Rebbe created a world which could deny His existence. Right. It's because Mitzada Etzim, the Emesh is not Mokrach in existence either. You would think that God could do anything, He could do opposites, but He has to continue being God, right? He can't not be God. You ready to make that statement about God?
So you're saying it's an expression of Hashem, the fact that the world is that way.
You're saying that?
No,
right. No, the fact that there's a world that could deny God's existence because God's not Mokach in existence either.
It's like the Yesh Amiti, the true Yesh.
In other words, in the weirdest way, existentialist philosophy, okay, or in its most extreme form, known as postmodern existentialist philosophy, is the closest thing to the truth that exists. Except they don't realize it. In other words, what are they saying? They're saying you can't define that ultimately the whole search that human beings have to define things is only because they can't conceive of randomness. They can't conceive of the indefinable. Therefore, they choose to define. But who says that has any basis in reality? Who says that that's real? You feel that way. You want to define things. You have this need to define things. But who says that there are definitions?
It's figurative use.
Right. Maybe in true reality, there are no definitions. And the truth is, they're right. They're not wrong. They're right. In true reality, there are no definitions. That true reality, the thing is, they don't realize is that true reality in which there are no definitions is God. And He decided to create a lower reality which has definitions. And therefore those definitions are functional within the context of that lower reality, but they ultimately exist only to reveal and prove the true reality in which there are no definitions.
The ultimate absurdity.
So basically, basically, we're all saying Chassidus and the ultimate Kfirah. Okay. The ultimate kfirah. Postmodern existentialism is the ultimate kfirah. What is their point? They take from this that being that there are no true, since in true reality there are no definitions, therefore everything is irrelevant. So it's irrelevant so basically you can only choose things in terms of their usefulness and functionality for you. So if Judaism works for you, that's fine. If paganism works for you, that's equally fine. If Christianity, if Islam works for you, that's fine. If no religion works for you, that's also fine. If making up a religion, having a different one on Monday, a different one on Tuesday, a Wednesday religion, if that's what makes, fine. Because nothing's real anyway, it's only what you make of it. So if that works for you, then it's fine. That's their conclusion. If that's the case, that in true reality there are no definitions, Once you get past outer space, there's nothingness, there's randomness, there's chaos. And once you get past logic, there's nothingness. That it's not that logic is standing on a solid basis. Beyond logic is just nothingness. Logic has right. There's something there's randomness beyond logic. Logic is just some self-contained existence, which is not really based on true reality. So if it's all random, it's all chaos, it's all in the true reality, there's nothing definitive that can be said. So do anything you want. So the ultimate kfira and the ultimate emuna are basically saying the same thing. They're just drawing the wrong conclusion from the same information. Knowing that, all we're doing is saying, you're right, that in true reality there are no definitions. But that true reality has a name. And that name of the true reality is God. And that God, whose true reality says, Bereshis Bar Elikim, he made a less true reality. That is supposed to ultimately become a keli to reveal his true reality. So you guys got it all right, but you're all wrong.
So basically, this level of kfira, the existentialist, came dafka at a time now as Hasidus.
Right, where Hasidus came to Atzmus.
And Mashiach.
Then Hashvi, Hasidus came to Atzmus. I'm talking about Hasidus, not primarily Rigiluim. And then Hashvi, the main topic of discussion is Atzmus. True reality.
And it reflects the Geula reality.
Right? True reality, no definition. And so therefore, the opposite, the ultimate kfira, represents the reflection of that. And it's true.
Reflection of what?
See, what freaks people out, the Professor Burgers in this world, is that they don't realize that kfira mirrors the truth. Kfira does not contradict the truth. Kfira mirrors the truth.
Tied to the word kfira.
All false beliefs mirror the truth. They don't. They're not opposite of the truth. They're an opposite. Like a mirror is the opposite. They mirror the truth, but it's reversed. Like a mirror image, they got it backwards.
All false beliefs.
So second comings. Second coming is a Christian concept. You're right. Where do you think Christian concepts come from? Everything that exists in the world comes from the Torah. It's tackled by Reisu Bar Alma. They looked into the Torah and created the world. Where does it say in the Torah about second coming? It says in the Torah. If you look, it says in the Zayah, it says in many places in the Torah. Talks about a second coming. So Klipa mirrors and reflects that back, and it talks about a second coming, just gives you the wrong address.
How can you disprove something like that if it comes from Torah?
Pardon?
How can you disprove something like that, can you? I mean, would you say theoretically that everything could stand on its own? Or is there some way where you could find something that would...
No, because if you follow the Torah, then you'll see that it's wrong. So, you know, someone says to you, well... You're saying, you yourself are saying it's the second coming. So yeah, the second coming of somebody who through him the Torah became strengthened and the observance of mitzvahs became strengthened and a greater measure of peace and prosperity entered into the world than ever existed in any time prior in history. As opposed to the other guy who everything that I just said got worse in his time. No one didn't want to undermine the study of the Torah, the performance of the commandments, the peace and prosperity of the Jewish people, and I mean, so like, hello. See, the idea is good. You just got the wrong address. That's all.
If Hashem wanted the Urbis Achtonim, why didn't he create it in such a way that it has a separate existence, quote unquote?
That it had?
A separate existence.
Because it ought to.
It appears to.
What?
Because it ought to.
But that's really B'tachtonim. What? How? Why not B'tachtonim?
Because that's whatever it is, in terms of what he wanted, that's not what he wanted. You're assuming that Dira Tachtenim is a Psamayla. So if I can make a whole deeper kind of Tachtenim.
No, he said the Rebbe, ain't Tachton Shilamata Mimano.
Right.
If the Rebbe, that's the world.
If you look, no. If you look in the Alter Rebbe, it says, ain't Tachton Lamata Mimano B'Yeridus Eire Yisbar. In the ladder of spiritual descent, there's nothing low. Gashmis isn't lower than Ruchnis. Gashmis is going to ultimately be higher than Ruchnis. In terms of the spiritual content of this world, is the lowest of all the worlds.
Say spiritual content or revealed spiritual content?
Pardon?
You say spiritual content, but B'Klal is lower, or just the revelation of it is lower?
Well, the spiritual content of this world.
How can you say that? If this world is where Atzmus is going to be revealed.
Because Atzmus is not spiritual. He's neither physical nor spiritual. Physicality and spirituality, that's your stuff. That's created stuff. God is neither. Of course not. No, he's not spiritual. He's not spiritual also. Therefore he could create a spirituality and physicality. He could even express himself into the spiritual and the physical, because he's not limited by... It's just spirituality is not an accurate description of him. To say that he's spiritual would not be accurately describing him. That's all I'm saying. To say that he's physical would not be accurately describing him. What? Right.
The world that Hashem created and then destroyed.
Pardon?
And it says Hashem created worlds and destroyed them. On the Tohu, that's not talking about real world. It's talking about just in the. In